with a series of events including a courageous conversation with the Coalition for Dismantling Racism on Building Diversity in Local Government, a virtual play reading by the Fleeing Artists Theater, and a Wisconsin Prince drive-by art exhibit. For a complete listing of events and for information about the foundation itself, visit KenoshaFoundation.org. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist with the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW-Parkside, and Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Hello, I'm Jane Herring, and welcome to Community Matters. And I'd like to welcome our guest today, Jason Peters, who is the Village and Town Administrator for Summers. Welcome to the program, Jason.
Hello, thanks for having me.
What I'd like to begin with, and it might be the most boring part because there is so much development going on in Summers right now. When I drive through, there's construction equipment everywhere. And I guess that's a positive thing. And we'll talk about how it does benefit the residents. But first, I have one of those questions that I just don't quite get. I know you've always been the town of Summers, and then suddenly you got the village designation as well. And now I see on your website and every place else, it's Village and Town of Summers. Can you explain that and what's the difference and why it was good to become a village?
Sure. So Summers has been around since the 1800s, 1843, but we were a town for most of that time period. And then in 2015, the majority portion of the town incorporated into the Village of Summers. And then there are some parcels that aren't that weren't contiguous to where the village boundaries were going to be. So those remained as the town of Summers. So right now there's basically two governments. There's the Village of Summers that governs over the majority of our acreage and our land, and then the town, which is, like I said, kind of scattered all about, kind of surrounded by parts of the city of Kenosha. And under an agreement with the city of Kenosha, those parcels that are in the town will automatically annex to the city of Kenosha in 2035. Those parcels in the town can annex to the city now under certain circumstances, but for now, those, I think the majority of those remnants parcels will stay in the town. It's a unique situation in the state of Wisconsin that we have that. And then under an agreement between the town and the village, our administration, or the town village hall here, we administer both governments, I'll put it that way. So we actually have two separate boards. So the town has a chairman and has two supervisors. And then the village has our village president and six trustees. So it's a unique situation for me as an administrator, because along with the citizens of both the town and the village being my boss, I also have 10 individual bosses. So it's a very unique situation.
I can well imagine. And is it true that once the city does annex these various parcels, then the town board would go away?
That's correct.
Okay.
So at at midnight on December 31st of 2034, at midnight when it strikes and it becomes 2035, the town of Summers will cease to exist.
Interesting. So what's the benefit of becoming a village? I can remember way back when Pleasant Prairie became a village, and that seemed to coincide with a lot of development. Is there that correlation?
Yeah, well, one of the benefits is once you become a village, you lock your borders. So there's so parcels can't be, when you're in a town, you can those parcels can be annexed by surrounding villages or cities. So one of the benefits was it, you know, established our borders, and then it is possible. One of the benefits of being a village is there you can do certain things with TIF financing and things like that. You can, with special legislation, you can do it with a town too, but it's a lot easier to do that when you're a village.
What year did the village designation come into being? I don't recall.
When did that happen? Is that what you asked?
Yeah, yes.
2015.
Okay, so it is fairly recent, but it's 5 years ago now. Now, what about the logo? Have I just been sleeping, or is that fairly new? I've just started seeing it in the past year.
Well, that logo's been, I came on with the village in 2017, so that was here before I got here, but it was around, I'm going to assume it was 2015, but we've made a concentrated effort here to get that logo out there since I've been here, because Summers is a unique place because we have, with our setup with the post office, so our residents, their mailing addresses are usually, they're either Kenosha or Racine, or some of them are even Sturtevant.
Oh, geez.
So it's hard to have an identity when people, you know, they say, well, where do you live? And, you know, you give your address and it'll say Kenosha, but, you know, you're actually in the village of Summers for most of those people. So we've been making a concentrated effort to get the name Summers out there, especially for the village of Summers out there. So to do that, we did our website with the help of a local company. We put a nice LED sign out in the front of the village hall that gives our residents updates what's going on, has our logo out there, lets people know where our municipal building actually is. And then with a generous donation from one of our trustees this year, we put up some banners up and down County Trunk Highway E here, kind of by the village hall. And when you're coming up from 94, as you're heading east towards Highway 31, some banners that are letting people know that you're in the village of Summers and you're, you know, welcoming them here. And those all have our logo on them.
Well, I have to say, at least from my personal perspective, it's working because I'm seeing all of those things. I'm seeing the banners. I'm seeing it on the trucks as they go around there doing their work. And it looks good. And I can remember moving to this area 40 years ago and thinking, oh, isn't that a cute little area on Highway E with all the historic homes? And now it's so much more than that. And that's what we really want to talk about today, because I see a huge acceleration in terms of both commercial development and residential development, particularly multifamily development. And it sounds, we talked just briefly before, and it's like you want to begin kind of geographically from one end of your area to the other. And I think that's an excellent plan. Let's begin with commercial development. I'll let you go at it, and then I'll ask some follow-up questions. What's one of the biggest projects that has been going on?
Okay, so I'll kind of start from County Trunk Highway E getting off on 94, and if you were heading east towards the lake. So the first thing that people will notice is that the Pritzker Archives and Military Park Center broke ground in October. So that's a 288-acre parcel that the Pritzker Military Museum and Library purchased in 2019. I believe they've closed on it, but we had been working with them for several years on this project. So what that'll be is the first phase of it is a archive center that will be a roughly about a 10,000 square foot gallery designed by Yon Architects, which are out of Chicago. They're world renowned. And 7% of the 200, what's unique about it is 7% of those 288 acres will only have, will have buildings on it. So the majority of that area there is going to remain green space.
That is unique. And is it going to be publicly accessible green space or a mixture?
It will be. They'll have walking paths. They'll have areas for people to congregate. That's just in the first phase. In the second phase, over 10 years, they hope to build, they're calling it a Midwest Firearms and Education Training Center. So that's all indoors. There's no outdoor shooting. Will take place on this site. That was originally was part of the project that they brought to the village, but the residents came out and let us know that they did not want outdoor shooting as a part of that, and the developer agreed to take that part out. So with that outdoor shooting range part out of it, I'm hoping that the residents that live around there will really see this as an asset for the village and for the region. It's going to be something that's really unique, really not anywhere in the world. And then as part of that, they'll eventually build the world's only Cold War veterans memorial. That's the plan as well. And then a little further on down the line, they hope to build what they're calling commercial archive storage. So it'll be a way for them to, people will be able to rent space from them to archive, you know, whatever they need to archive or store things there.
I was intrigued. I'm not a gun person. I'll be the first to admit that one. But something I saw on, I believe it was their website or a news release from them, that they will have period firearms, and that those who are into guns would find that a really unique opportunity to shoot a firearm that would be basically an antique or from a particular military period in time.
Yeah, correct. For the indoor firearms education training center, they'll have experts on staff that if, let's say, you know, you're interested in, you know, maybe a Civil War musket or something like that, they'll have some of those available that you will be able to come in, and they'll do demonstrations, or I don't know personally if they'll let you shoot them or not yet, but that's one of their goals.
It's just very unique, and it's an experience that I think some people, besides just having a place to store very important materials, and it's going to be right in your backyard, that seemed like an interesting and different experience that I haven't heard of.
It's pretty neat. We got, as part of when we were going through the process and first meeting with them, they brought a couple of us. We went down to Chicago where their actual library is, and they allowed us to walk around and see, you know, all the artifacts that they have. And we got to go into their, you know, special curator room, and they've got books from, you know, the Civil War that you can actually see, and with special gloves, we got to hold them and look at them. So it's a real neat thing that they're, you know, they're doing to preserve our history.
So that's our first and big and probably more heavily promoted development that we've heard happening. What comes next as we start heading east?
So the next one, when you're heading east on EA and E, there's a development there. The developer is calling Summersville. This one's actually a multifamily residential project that just went to the Plan Commission last Monday, or the 16th, on the 9th, and went to the board work session this past Tuesday on the 17th. So it's a mixture of duplexes, townhouses, and apartments. There will be 516 units, which sounds like a lot, but it's over 65 acres, and it works out to about 8 units per acre. And just to give your listeners an idea of what that means, so there's a development that Summers did that I'll talk about a little later, a couple years ago, by Walmart with a Bear Development called Market Square apartments. That one is about 14 to 15 units per acre. So this is about half of what that is. So it'll be a little more spread out. There's 490 market rate apartments, and they're going to do 26 owner occupied units in the form of duplexes. And one nice thing that we really pushed the developer on is having a nice clubhouse area for all these residents. So they're proposing a 9,000 square foot clubhouse with a pool, a fitness center, a lounge, a game room, coffee bar. There's volleyball courts that they'll have, a tennis sport court, which is nice because those can be converted to different things like pickleball, which is really popular now. And they'll have dog parks. And then they have like a central, well, it's not really centralized, but a big area that looks kind of like a mini central park that their residents will be able to use. So it's really nice. We've worked with this developer for about a year before they brought the project. We asked a lot of them because we've got some high standards here in Summers, and we want to keep it nice and rural as much as possible, but with the understanding that, you know, development is happening around us and we're a very hot market right now.
And I think that that's what's kind of interesting too, is you say like you're the last frontier, but in a way you kind of are, to have such a strong governmental base, and yet you have so much open space, or you have had so much open space up until probably the last 4 years. So is that part of what's making you so attractive to these developers?
I think that's part of it. The other part is just the real estate market in general in this area is actually very hot. So we're Summers and Kenosha and Pleasant Prairie and Bristol, we actually all qualify as part of the, it's called the Chicago MSA market. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the hottest real estate markets in the country. So when it comes to, you know, businesses wanting to relocate to Wisconsin, there's a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of developers, you know, you'll just go up and down I-94. There's new warehouse buildings and manufacturing buildings going up all over the place. So as a part of that, those people need workers, and those workers need a place to live. So they're, you know, as businesses come, they need workers, and workers need places to live. So they're, you know, they're kind of intertwined. And I think that's what's one of the reasons why all of a sudden we're a very hot area.
As you're looking at some of the residential developments, and we're going to be talking more because I know there's a whole lot more out there that we have yet to get to, it's a pretty strong mix between moderate income and high income housing moving into Summers.
Well, right now, the main thing that developers are coming with is multifamily projects. And as much as we try to get, you know, single family developments going, just the cost of doing single family residential, you know, like a new subdivision right now, is just astronomical. So we're not seeing a whole lot of developers willing to take that risk to, you know, do a development. Coincidentally, we actually met with someone today that I think that we'll finally be able to bring a new subdivision of single family houses to Summers here in the next, you know, it's a long process, so a year or so. But it's the first one. Like I said earlier, I've been here since 2017, and we've really been pushing when developers come in Like, for example, for the Summersville one we just talked about, when they originally came in, they only wanted only rentals. So just multifamily, they just wanted to do rentals. So we really pushed them to try to incorporate these duplexes, and we're really happy with them that they decided to do it, and they're going to make them, they're going to be pretty nice.
Well, it sounds like it, especially with the amenities you described. Wow.
That's one of the things that's driving up the price of the rentals, but from what the developers that are coming in are saying is, you know, you can't just put up an apartment build. If you want a larger development, you can't just put up apartment buildings anymore, because the people that are renting them, they want to have somewhere to go. They want to have workout centers. They want to have a nice place to go right near their apartment or their townhouse or whatever they're renting. So it's another thing, as I said, we talk about developments down the down County Highway Trunk E here. One development that went in, they really put in an awesome clubhouse. And when anybody has come in after that, we've really pushed them as, okay, that's summer standards now. That's what we want them to look like. And for the Summersville one, they looked at the first time they brought something in, we're like, well, that's nice, but, you know, take a look at this. And they came back with something that really is really nice.
Well, and I would guess if they want to attract the best renters, then they're going to have to compete with that. So it's probably a good thing that they see what everybody else, like you say, what the standard is for the region. Mm-hmm. Jason Peters, who is the Village and Town Administrator for Summers, and we've just started talking about a couple of the major projects, and I know there's a ton more. So we're moving east along A. Are we going to stick with E?
Yes. So if you keep from the Summersville one at EA and E that I just spoke about, if you keep going east, when you get to E and 31, you'll see Hawthorne Apartments. So on the corner there, kind of behind the mm-hmm. BP station there. So that's is 242 units of market rate apartments. It's on 24 acres. That was a group out of Chicago called Ravine Park Partners, but they also have some strong ties to the Kenosha area. One of their partners also has pretty strong ties here. So they came to us, I think in 2017, started, it was approved in, 2018. They were originally going to build their development over five phases, but as they were putting them up, people wanted to rent them, so they decided to do all five phases at the same time.
Oh, that's a big change.
Yeah, and it's a really nice, different type of multifamily place or development where they're kind of, they're standalone building. So it's just having, instead of it just having one big structure as your apartment building, there's, you know, they look like really big houses. I'll put it that way. That's how I see them. So they were really good to work with as well. And as I was saying, they were the ones that pretty much set the standards for what a clubhouse should look like. And if we're going to do any more of these type of developments, because this one has a really nice in-ground pool that's outside that has semi-private cabanas that overlook a tree line that's really nice. It's got a state-of-the-art fitness center with cardio and yoga, and you can do fitness on demand. It's got fire pits outside with grilling stations. The building itself in the inside has an entertainment and social lounge. There's a media and party room that you can use. There's a place where if you want to do, they call it co-working space. It's got a coffee bar. Then they've got a demonstration kitchen in there. There's a place for off-leash dog park, and they've got a little pet spa. And they've even got a place where if you need to repair your bike, you can fix your bike because bike trails are going up all over Kenosha County. So it's really nice. And then as a part of that same development, we approved three commercial outlots. So one of those outlots is already filled in, and that's going to be home to, it's called the Wisconsin Veterinary Referral Center Vet Clinic, the VRC for short. That's a 12,000 square foot animal hospital, and they should be opening their doors very soon.
Yeah, it looked finished. I didn't realize they hadn't opened yet. Neat.
Yeah. Very soon. And then, like I said, there's two other lots that are available there that they're working hard to market and get some other people in there. But with, you know, the situation the world is under right now, some people just aren't willing to take the risk right now on some commercial property like that.
Understandable. Okay. So far, you have described some really awesome living opportunities. What else is going on out there?
Well, if you keep going, heading east towards the lake on E, you'll see at County Trunk E and 22nd Avenue, we call it the Golden Oil Project. So that's the Golden Oil is actually the owner of the Kenosha Travel Plaza.
Yes.
Off of 94 in Summers. So they're building their 7,500 square foot facility that's going to house their corporate headquarters. There'll also be, it's an Amoco service station as well. And then within that building, there'll be a Subway, another new restaurant or kind of fast casual to the Summers area is called Hunt's Brothers Pizza. And there'll be a Chester's Chicken in there.
May I say that they are really torquing on that project? It seemed like one day saw somebody out there with a surveyor type of equipment, and then the next day there were 18 trucks on the property.
Yeah, they hope to be open in March of 2021, so that's really not that far away.
No, it is not. I think a lot of people remember when the Pub and Grub was there years ago. And then the Bratstop, or not Bratstop, but Brewmasters, and then nothing for years and years. And I think that's what's fascinating to me is you really didn't see much going on in Summers. And then now you can't go for five blocks without seeing construction equipment.
Yeah, that's pretty common all over down by us now in southeastern Wisconsin.
Yeah, it's exciting. Keep on going east to Sheridan Road, because there's another situation where it seems every place where there was blank space, there's construction equipment.
Yep, so if you keep going east and you get to 32 and County Trunk Highway E there, there's another 8-unit apartment building going in there. So that's the first residential project that's happened over there in a while. So that's a smaller one. But the main thing that people should know about the Sheridan Road corridor is the village is working on a huge sewer and water project out there. So in 2021, we're hoping that we're going to, on the water side, we're going to replace all the water mains from Sixth Place all the way up to KR on all the side streets. And the need for that is the water system out there is almost 70 years old and it needs to be redone. So the mains are all right in Sheridan, though that was done a few years ago, but the side streets really need to be updated. And to do that, we're tapping it's called a safe drinking water loan. That's federal dollars administered by the state of Wisconsin. So it's a way to do low interest loans, and they allow us to go out to up to 30 years. And the estimated, we think that project is going to come in at around $5.5 million. And then at the same time, while we're doing that, we're going to do a sewer project out there. So the same area, those same side streets, we're going to reline all the sewer lines there. And to do that, we're tapping what's called a clean water fund loan through the same. It's very similar to the safe drinking water. So we've been ramping up for this for about a year just to get through the loan process so we can qualify for these low interest, long-term loans and to get all the engineering and everything done. So we're hoping to go out to bid here real soon and close on all the loans and hopefully start that project sometime in 2021.
I do want to talk about some of the housing developments going on down that way, but let's talk a little bit more about the infrastructure and some challenges on Sheridan Road. When you go east from Sheridan, in many places, you barely have enough room now for one house thanks to the erosion. Is that anything that the town and village need to address, or is that something that really is, it's all privately owned right now?
Well, that's the thing. We get a lot of calls, or we were getting a lot of calls from residents down there wanting us to help. The problem is you know, our budgets are pretty strapped, so there's really not extra funds to do reventment down there for them, because reventment is a very expensive proposition when it comes to Lake Michigan properties. And to qualify for federal loans or grants and programs like that, most of the time the land needs to be owned by the village. So, and like you said, all sure. That entire, pretty much that entire coastline there is owned by it in private hands.
And that makes it a challenge. Now, when you're putting through some of the new storm sewer water system, updating that from 70 years ago, is that along the east side of Sheridan at all, or where are those pipes?
It's actually on both sides, so all the side streets.
Okay. And there are the side streets, and especially as you get closer to Carthage, there are side streets that go east, as well as some of the sides that go west.
Correct.
And there's also some property that's not really, it does not appear to be developed to the west of Sheridan Road around A or whatever. Maybe it's privately owned. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Project be affecting those undeveloped areas or what appear to be undeveloped?
No, like I said, we'll just be replacing the existing water mains and lining the existing sewer.
Oh, okay.
There are a couple other properties there that have, you know, changed hands in the last couple of years that the owners are actively trying to, you know, come up with a way to redevelop some of the areas over there.
Okay. All right. Let's continue our development trip. What's next along Sheridan Road?
That's pretty much it for Sheridan Road.
Okay.
So I should mention too, as a part of, I'm going to switch back to I-94 for a second there.
Definitely.
So as a part of the Pritzker project, the Pritzker Archives and Memorial Park Center, we needed to put in infrastructure for them for sewer and water as well. So as a part of that, we'll be putting in, they gave us a letter of credit for $14.5 million to do that same amount of work for sewer and water. So that will bring sewer and water to that whole I-94 corridor over there. And that'll open up probably another 1,000 acres of development along 94 there.
I think that's a pretty important, crucial point. So let's spend a couple of moments on that. So the Pritzkers really are paying for their own sewer and water development because it's the property they purchased. They've given you that amount to work with, but then that's going to also benefit those lands that are not owned by the Pritzkers and will make it more attractive to other developers. Do I have that right?
Correct. They've fronted the money. So through our development agreement, we basically pay Pritzker does pay their portion of, you know, what sewer and water that they're going to use. The other parcels there will be assessed for their portion as it goes by. But most of the, through the same process, we have to acquire easements from these landowners. And some of them have been asking for this sort of infrastructure to get out there for a while. So it's going to be, it's like I said, it's going to open up a lot of areas and spark a little more interest out there near the eye.
I'm sure that the village has had discussions about the types of developments you're looking for. I mean, you've had one set the standard and then you held the next developer to that standard. As you're looking to some of those parcels between Pritzker's property going west, as that becomes available or is sold to developers, are you going to be or guiding developers as to what type of development you're going to be looking for? I mean, would it be commercial, industrial, more housing?
Yep, we have a comp plan in place that we show developers when they come in if they've got a certain idea, and if it fits the comp plan, then, you know, then we go to the next step and see what sort of thing they want to bring in. And we, as administration, we try to guide them, just, you know, tell them if we think that it's something that the plan commission would accept. And it's something that after the plan commission accepts, well, the village board accepts. And we're just very honest with them and say, you know, Summers has traditionally been a rural place. It's growing fast. So we don't want to grow too fast. So we're very selective on what we, you know, what we bring to our boards.
And the plan that you referenced, and I was having trouble hearing, what is the first word? What plan do you call it?
Our comprehensive land use plan.
Yeah, for short. Comprehensive, got it. Comp plan. Got it. How long has that been in effect?
Well, it's been in effect for, I can't remember. I grew up in Wisconsin, but I moved back to Wisconsin and for this position in 2017. So it's been in place since I've been here. I don't know when the comp plan, there's actually a state statute that requires all municipalities and counties to have this sort of comp plan. So I'm not exactly sure when it went into place, but the one we have now, part of it goes out, they call it a 2035 plan. And okay. Then very in the near future, we'll be updating those to a, what we call a 2050 plan. So just, you know, you reassess what your, you know, what your demographics of your village are, what, you know, what's been built since your plan's been put in place, and, you know, update it to see maybe there's an area that, you know, you had as was all commercial. And maybe we look at it now and say, well, maybe commercial won't work there anymore because of what's been built around it.
And I'm sure when you were brought in, that was something that they were really looking to you to help guide, because it'd be very easy to just take anything that comes along. Boy, this is pretty exciting. They're coming with big dollars. How do you go about evaluating and feeling comfortable as you're working with the with your bosses, your many bosses?
Well, you know, we have a little development team that we kind of have together. So we work with the village. Actually, we contract with Kenosha County to do our zoning and planning. So instead of, you know, hiring it like a, you know, a private company, we work with we hire Kenosha County to help us. So, you know, the director, Andy Bueller, and Luke Godshall is the planner that I work with a lot. And then our village president, George Stoner, sits in on a lot of our first initial meetings with the people just to get, you know, a flavor of what they're bringing and seeing if it's something that we think the rest of the, like two boards would, like I said, the rest of the two boards would accept. And we just kind of slowly move it down the down the pipeline.
Okay. And then the group of bosses you really didn't mention are the citizens. And I know that there's many of them, and you hear from them. I would imagine this would be a big change. Like I say, when I moved here, there were more of those roads were dirt roads, and a lot of the developments certainly were not even in anybody's mind would be coming. And it was seen as a very rural community. I can remember being able to ride my bike in 5 minutes and be among the cows. So That's a big change. What are you hearing from citizens, and what are the pros of having this sort of development for the average taxpayer?
Well, from, you know, as part of all these processes, we try to be as open as possible through the, to be honest, completely honest with the Pritzker process. We learned a lot of things about the process here in Summers and took some pretty big lumps. And, you know, you got to learn from things. So one of the things that we try to do is, I mean, by village ordinance, when certain things happen, we have to notify owners that are landowners that are so close to the, you know, to the new development. But as a part of that too, we try to put all of our the planning commission packets that they see, that our plan commissioners see before the meetings, we put it on our new website that we talked about earlier. When it goes before all of our, we go, these same developments have to go through the village board. So the village board has work sessions and board meetings. So for both of those, we also put all the packets that our trustees see on our website, and we try to, you know, push out information that way. So we try to make it that if somebody wants to know what's going on, that they have a place to go and they can see what's happening. I mean, it's not always feasible to let everybody in the village know, you know, exactly what's happening on one piece of parcel, one parcel, by, you know, notifying them individually. So it's the best way that we can do to push the information out there so people know what's going on, and if they want to be a part of the process and they want to come to the meetings and let us know what they think of these things, they have the opportunity.
And what about effect on the annual tax bill? It seems to me you're bringing more of these properties onto the tax roll, and that should have a positive effect on taxes, but you're also having to do infrastructure work. How is that balancing out?
Correct. That's one of the challenges. When you're now your village, you're responsible for all of your things that go along with running a government. So you have to provide police protection. You have to provide health, life, safety, and all the other things go along with those. So those, that's a big cost for the village. You know, our public works now has more things to do. So we need to start bringing in some more commercial development, so we have that tax base to, you know, alleviate our residents. So that's one of the things that we're trying to, I said earlier, it's been a tough time to get commercial development with. It was tough before COVID. It's a little tougher now. We seem to be weathering the storm pretty good here in Summers so far. And honestly, in the whole Kenosha County and our region seems to be doing all right. But you still want to keep bringing in good quality commercial development, so that takes the burden of some of those things off of our residents.
Well, thank you so much, Jason, for joining us today. Unfortunately, we're out of time, and you have so much going on there.
Oh, I didn't even get to half of the developments.
I know. We're going to send people to your website for sure. We've been talking with Jason Peters, who is the Village and Town Administrator for Summers. Thank you for joining us today.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.